Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. To rise up everybody and burn down the system, fails the exit pool. Wake up the silence, but the death. I'm feeling the love in the silence club. I can feel the space between us. Little Captain and the common man. I just know them all.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show. And, of course, our bump and tag is from the guys at Zero King. And we got a big announcement coming up involving them and another artist for Imaginarium. And that's going to be a pretty exciting announcement coming up pretty shortly. We're not ready to do it just yet, but that gives you a little bit of a teaser heading into things. And, of course, this is Stephen Zimmer. And tonight our co-hosts are Michael West, Susan Roddy, and Sayla Janelle. And we are, yeah, and I even got Sayla's name correct tonight, so I get a bonus
tonight.
So, yeah, I've been training on, I'm working on that around the clock. I do at least 100 times a day. But it's, wow, we are getting ready for a big March. That's all I got to say. Of course, the show is brought to you by Seven Star Press. Tomorrow comes media and Imaginarium Convention, so that's why we give you a little bit of news at the beginning. And Seven Star Press front is going to be crazy in March. We got some massive special offers, so we'll be able to get something from pretty much every single author, every anthology. There's going to be some special offers running all throughout the month. We got you definitely want to look at the next issue of Locus Magazine and Fangoria Magazine and some others, and look on the pages of some great sites like Bitten by Books and Night Owl Reviews and all kinds of places, because there's going to be a lot of stuff going on with Seven Star Press in March, so get ready for that. And on the Imaginarium front, we are excited. We named another Imaginator, and this is our Imaginator for our comics and graphic novel side of things. We just announced that Dan Jolly has come aboard with us and for Imaginarium 2014. And Dan has a brand new 6-issue miniseries with Dark Horse Comics, a Terminator miniseries, which is really cool. And Dan's also worked in the video game industry, too. He did the Transformers titles, War for Cybertron and Fall of Cybertron. And he's worked with novelizations. He's worked with like every major publisher in the world. So, I mean, this guy is just fantastic. And, I mean, we're definitely going to have him in programming on the book and book side of things and the gaming side of things. But he's coming in as our comics and graphic novel Imaginator, joining author Maurice Brodus. And on the screenwriting side, Jeffrey Reddick. So we've got 3 Imaginators designated. And hopefully soon we'll have a guest of honor. But so that gives you a little bit of news from the Imaginarium front. And so with that said, I will see what's going on with everybody, our wonderful group of co-hosts. Anything new on your all's front?
No, not really. I'm the same boring person as ever.
Don't everybody talk to one.
Michael's excited.
I
know, Mike, you're excited because you've got a sneak peek at that little thing that's coming out in Fangoria, so I know you're looking forward to March.
Oh, yeah. I got a sneak peek at a limited edition illustration that's going to be in the limited edition hardcover of Y Game, which if you haven't ordered your copy yet, please do it now, because there was only 75 printed and they're going fast. So, but I think the artist has Matthew Perry. I think he's captured it well. So I'm really excited about that. And yes, and then I did get a sneak peek of a of something that's going to be in the next issue of Fangoria that I'm really excited about. So
cool, cool. And I know Selah's working with Jason Conley on some artwork right now for her first book with us. And we're also gunning down the road with Susan because she's getting closer to that launch point too.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting there slowly. I'm definitely working on edits and slowly trying to get as quick as I can things going. I'm getting excited. I think it's going to be really cool.
Very cool. And, of course, got to give shout-outs to all the folks, hardworking staffs at both Mysticon and Conuga, which were held this past weekend. We had a lot of our friends, and you know, we just had our recent guests, Alexander Christian and Telly Johnson were up at Mysticon, and myself and J.L. Mulvihill and Alex Adams were down at Conuga, and the conventions were I heard nothing but good out of Mysticon, and then I can tell you personally, Conuga is fantastic and just keeps getting bigger every year. So, I mean, it was definitely cool. The kickoff to convention season went really well, and we're hoping to carry that momentum right into this coming March with Authors Fair in Madison, Indiana, and then Mid-South Con, of course, is one of our big ones out of Memphis, and then, of course, EvilCon, which is going to be a big one for Selah. So
yeah.
I know you're looking forward to that.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, Selah Mania is going to take root there. That's going to be a lot of fun.
And then, I'll also be at Horror Hound in March, so that'll be a good time.
Very cool.
Awesome. Horror Hound is a lot
hanging
of
out,
fun.
Yeah, hanging out
what
with Bruce Campbell and the cast of Evil Dead. I'm sorry.
What dates are Horror Hound this year? I just slipped my mind.
It's
the 21st and the 23rd.
So you'll be there when I'm down at Mid-South Con. It's that same, that weekend. Okay. That'll be a big one then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the following week is, of course, the big one because Fangoria's street date is March 25th, sir. So that's going to be a pretty crazy week for you.
Hey, I've already told everybody to run to Barnes & Noble and whatnot and
read
the news.
I want a hard copy of this one. And there's a few birds twittering to me that there may be a contest online with Fangoria with a certain Michael West taking place around that time zone. We don't have the exact date, but there's something coming online. So be on the lookout for that if you're familiar with Fangoria online. So. But it's going to be really cool, too. So, yeah, just God, I mean, it's crazy. I can't even begin to say how much preparation has gone into March. But, it's definitely going to be a big one.
When do you sleep, Stephen?
Not much lately. Oh, for many reasons. But it's gonna be a big month, and I'm very excited about the energy that's with it for everybody because we're gonna be doing a lot, hitting the road a lot, a lot of contests and special offers. I mean, that's gonna be great for readers too because they're gonna be able to pick up a whole lot of cool stuff for cheap.
Oh, yeah.
So that's always good. But but tonight, though, I guess we have a fantastic guest, Susan has all kinds of insights on this guest that's coming up, but I have to say that Crimson was actually one of the first of the gang that I met at Con Carolina, so I'll never forget it. I was just walking the hall, and I was with a couple of friends, Susan Rummel and Lori Baker, and we just walked up to a very nice, polite-looking author, and it was Crimson, and she's one of the first people that I met at Con Carolina's, and we hit it off really great and had a friendship since then, and just the way that paths have taken. I mean, I'm just really stoked that now she's going to be doing some books with Seven Star Press, which, you know, got announced recently in a press release. And I'm, you know, and I think she's a great way to finish out our Women in Horror Month celebration too. So, or we should say Women in Horror Month celebration, you know, for Sayla there.
There you go. Bum.
Gotta coin that phrase. But we need Cool in the Gang to redo that song too.
That should be the name of your website, though.
Oh my God, it should be. Yeah. Ooh, Susan, we gotta do that.
Hey, that could be a
link. Our millions
of
listeners, there might be somebody. There might be a squatter out there among our millions of listeners who might go steal the website now.
Yeah.
You better rush.
No. Oh man,
but,
so are we doing this guest interview, or what are we doing?
But do you want to do the introduction honors, Susan, for our guest tonight as we bring her on?
Sure, I can sit here while she can't talk and tell all of her secrets. That'll be great.
Cool, go for it.
Well, as you mentioned before, our guest tonight is Crimson Heart. She is the authoress of both paranormal, erotic romance, and horror. She has, I know, at least 70-something titles to her name over the past 7 or 8 years. She's been doing this a lot longer than I have. She's a lot better at it than I am. And she also just happens to be one of my best friends in the world. So I guess I'll stop there and let her tell her own secrets. So there
she
you go.
She is live. Crimson Heart is live.
Hi!
Well, hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on, Stephen, and Michael, and Sayla, and Susan, and everyone else in the listening world. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. And, of course, you I don't know, you know, do you remember that Con Carolinas when we came up to your table?
I do. I remember Susan had her little zombie puppet and was going around taking pictures of everybody. And
uh-huh.
I think she was throwing Scarefest. It was her and Lori,
yep.
And you were, you know, yeah.
Yeah, we were showing some love to Scarefest that weekend. And they were up. That's a Lexington-based convention, in case you aren't familiar with it, but that's a Lexington-based paranormal horror kind of convention. But, yeah, I still remember that day clearly. I still remember actually walking up to the table and talking to you. I don't know if that's disturbing that I remember it so well. But
No, not at all. It's great. We've been friends for a few years now.
Yeah.
So.
But... Well, if you could put up with me that long, then that's usually a good sign.
Oh, of course.
But,
well, like, how can you put up with me and all the crazy things that, you know, I end up writing, you know, including the monster porn, apparently.
Well, like Susan just kind of hinted at, I mean, you've just got an insane number of books and, you know, published. I'm always like just blown away. I mean, it seems like yesterday you were at like 40 and then the day after you're up to 60 and now you're, you know, at 70, 80 books out. I mean, you're just like unbelievably prolific.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I've actually had to slow down in writing how much I do because of my hands, but I write through the pain. Writing, I work from home now, so it's a lot easier to go between my day job and writing. And it's either paranormal, romance, or horror, depending on the day. And I think now I'm up to over 80 books that are written, not necessarily published. But, yeah.
But the Crimson Heart catalog is a big one.
So like, how the heck? How do you even do that? Like, what?
I've been doing it for 8 years, so
they kind of
add up, and my goal is to do, you know, like one a month, but that doesn't always happen, and, you know, we're
not
talking.
Five that I don't remind her that she's an overachiever.
Yeah, all you authors out there, yeah, one a month, one book a month is not like the normal output for authors.
No, it's not.
No.
No. No, yeah. I know.
I think she's really
scaring all the young authors out there.
She's come here to like shame us all. I don't even know.
I don't have children. I mean, not that authors that have kids don't write a lot, you know, don't write quick either. I have dogs, and they're, you know, annoy the crap out of me, but that's a whole different story. And I have a husband.
Well, I'm not saying I can't write a book a month. I mean, come on.
I'm lucky if I could write a short story in a month.
I know. I feel like you're crazy erotica writing super chick. Like, you're like from Krypton, and that's your superpower.
Yeah, well, right now I need a wrist replacement on both, so it's not necessarily my superpower.
So what type of – this is actually a good question, but what type of authors and all got you to, you know, come inspired you to want to be a writer? Or what were kind of some of your foundational inspirations?
Gosh, I've always been I've been reading vampire novels and horror novels since I was a kid. And my grandparents kind of frowned on it because they're like, oh, you're going to grow out of, you know, this stage of your life and – apparently I never did, but I don't know. I mean, Anne Rice, I was a big L.J. Smith fan before, you know, the publishing industry raped her and took away all her books. Nancy Kilpatrick, Tracy Byrie, the list kind of goes on. There's a whole bunch of them. Christopher Moore, Stephen King. I don't know. I can't remember all of them.
Yeah, it's curious because you write a lot of different, you know, styles and genres. I mean, you definitely, you know, are multifaceted as far as your writing. And
yeah,
so I was just kind of curious as to your roots or what were the core roots.
Yeah, mostly it was horror. I didn't actually start off writing romance. My books kind of got categorized that way with one of my first publishers. Because of the romance element, but the books themselves were horror, you know, vampires and angels and stuff. And, you know, then I went to another publisher, and they didn't really like all the horror elements, so they're like, we'll take that out and just make it a little sappier and, you know, more shapeshifters. And so it kind of just depends on what publisher now that I'm writing for. Some really like the horror stuff with the romance, and some like, yeah, no, just a little bit of blood and that's it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because, I mean, like I know currently you've got some stuff with Purple Sword and Secret Cravings. Do you want to, you know, maybe give some insight to some of the things you have going on with those publishers, and then you can maybe segue into some of the stuff you have going on with SSV?
Sure. Secret Cravings is actually one of the newer publishers that I just signed with. Excuse me, I have a contemporary romance coming out with them in April called Lube It Up, and it's not what you think by the title.
Sure.
Oh, no. I'm not going to give it all away, but and it's my first contemporary romance ever, no paranormal, nothing. So hopefully that will go well. And Purple Sword, the owner was my first editor at my first publishing company. Over the years, she edited several of my books, and we kind of hopped around between different publishers, and she became one of my cover artists. So, and then she set up her own publishing company, and she's like, hey, come over with me. And so I've been with her for several years, and I write mainly more the horror romance, erotic romance with her, because she's really open to, Purple Sword is really open to the speculative fiction, and they don't really put a limit on what an author can write. And so that kind of, you know, I have like 20 books with them, I think. And you know, I started that's actually the first erotic horror novel series that I wrote is now with her, and that kind of got me writing the Grim Reapers, which are going to be coming out with Seventh Star. So it's kind of a break-off series from what I wrote with them.
Very
cool. So that should be interesting. Yeah.
So what is it like working with, several publishers? I mean, yeah, as far as like the different, what's the experience like with the different flavors of publishers?
It's very interesting depending. I've worked with some of the really bigger ones, like FaZe and Bookstrand, and they're, I haven't had the greatest experiences with several publishers just because I couldn't talk to the editor. I've had one book that the editor just went and changed everything and didn't get my permission to do it. But working with the smaller publishers is so much better because you actually have one-on-one interaction with your editor and you just feel more at home with the smaller ones. So I'm also with Sugar and Spice Press and Amira Press, and Amira Press was one of the ones that got me started in writing. So, you know, they're kind of always one of the ones I send stuff to. It's kind of hard to jump around with all the different presses, but after doing it now for so long, I have, you know, just a core group of which ones I send stuff to. I've learned the hard way you don't put all your eggs in one basket, so I've had to spread out over the years and kind of put different, you know, books at different places.
So you get like a royalty check like almost daily with the size of book collection you have. Is that right?
Not at all. God, I wish. If I did, I wouldn't be doing insurance because, you know, we all know insurance is so stimulating.
Well, I gave Alexandra trouble because I always joke with her that, you know, she just sits around and collects the royalties all day. But I mean, with your 80 bucks, I mean, oh, my God. I mean, it's not too shabby. As far as the catalog goes.
No, the catalog is great, but I don't make a lot of money on my royalties. I mean, I'm not knocking it out of the park. It helps me go to cons and get promo stuff and help pay bills every once in a while, but that's it. I have to work.
Interesting you mentioned cons. Tell us, Crimson, how about what's coming up for you in toward the end of May?
I will be at Con Carolinas along with you and with Susan and with Alexandra.
Yay!
And Callie. Yay. So,
is
yes,
James
we'll
Tuck going to be there?
It.
Does anybody know, is James Tuck going to be at Con Carolinas? I just cannot remember off the top of my head.
Because
I wonder if he'll be there too.
So,
yeah,
I'm not really
sure. Somebody tells me he's going to be there too as well. So, yeah, it'll be at least, what, is that five of us, I guess?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
We
yeah,
consider
Julie
James part of the
never
family.
Be the same.
Yeah. But Con Carolinas, though, I mean, that's kind of, yeah, in a way, that's kind of like a home convention for you, right?
Yes, it's a home convention. It's only like a half an hour from my house. So I try to, you know, go at least to support my fellow authors that are there if I'm not a guest, because it's always nice to go and say hi to people.
So it's Crimson Heart,
and
special guest that George
you,
R.
You know,
R. Martin. That's kind of how it's going to be built.
What?
So will you let George R. R. Martin hang out with us?
Oh, of course.
Maybe.
Of course.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, I'll be at Imaginarium, too, in September. So, you know, we have to all get together then.
Oh, I know. Hopefully we'll recover from Con Carolinas by then.
I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm already fearful of what's going to happen to Charlotte when you put Susan, Alexandra, and Crimson together at the same event that George R. R. Martin's going to be at. I mean, that could launch the endless winter and massive destruction.
It just means that we win.
But no, it's a great convention. I mean, it just gets – it's another one of those that seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And it's not going to hurt that George Martin's there. I mean, I'm sure there will be at least one or two of his readers coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I'll never forget Joseph Beth. I got pictures of it. But when he did the last signing for his last book, I mean, it was – I mean, upper deck and lower deck in the main atrium just filled. I mean, easily over 1,000 people there to see him. And it was just – absolutely crazy. So I'm expecting there to be I'm expecting the halls to be pretty packed at Con Carolina. So yeah, we're gonna have to come up with a battle plan for how to get around there.
Oh yeah,
does he bring the throne?
Now.
But the throne. Oh, I hope they do because I'd love to get a picture in that thing. So
that would be awesome.
It's kind of ironic. It's kind of ironic because we did a book versus movie panel the year before last that I was on about Martin's stuff right when the TV show had started, and we were talking about a comparison between the book series and the TV show, and then here, you know, 2 years later, you know, he's actually going to be there, and so that's going to be a for me at least, that'll be a pretty big highlight, but I think it'll be pretty exciting for all the authors like Crimson and everybody that's going to be there, I think, to have somebody on that level, I mean, for sure, being there. That's always gives you a little bit of a boost.
Oh, I think it'll be a great, you know, thing for the authors that are going to be there, and, you know, especially, you know, like I was telling my husband, because he's coming too, about him, and he's just like, well, who's that? And I was telling him, like, you know, the Game of Thrones guy. He's like, okay. He's not really a big reader, but, you know, kind of opened his eyes. He's like, look, honey, I could be this famous one day.
That is going to be fun, though. But, yeah, I probably have a whole gamut. I don't – do you know – you don't know your panels or anything yet, probably, because I don't think I have that information yet, but I don't think they're
No, they
that
haven't even
yet.
Started suggesting.
Okay, because I was going to ask, yeah, if you did know, then you could maybe mention what you're doing there, but I guess it's still a little early for that.
Yeah, well, I know their website got hacked, so – or they're rebuilt.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they've actually just in the last few weeks gotten their new website back up, and they're starting to get everything up there. But usually with Con Carolinas, it's in March before they'll start working on panels and all, because they're still trying to get, you know, guests and the dealer room and all that secured. So,
very cool. Very cool. So what are you looking forward to in addition to Con Carolinas? You said Imaginarium's on your map, and is there anything else this summer, or is that pretty much it for the summer?
No, that's pretty much it for the summer. Just, you know, besides family stuff, I travel back home and see my my dad and my brothers and stuff in New Hampshire, so that usually takes up some time. But nothing writing-oriented.
So what's your routine like as far as that goes, especially since you actually, you know, don't have – I mean, you work out of your home for your, you know, day gig. So how's your typical day in routine go?
Well, I would love to say, you know, I go into the luxurious office waited on hand and foot by, you know, two of the lovely Cabana boys that live out by my pool. But unfortunately, it's not that glamorous.
That's how Alexandra lives.
Yeah. No, usually I get up by 7 o'clock on my computer, surrounded by the dogs, and editing or writing for a couple hours, and then I go into my office and work on the day job, and usually do that until 2 or 3 in the afternoon, depending on how busy I am, and then it's go back into the other room and, you know, on switch computers and start working on whatever I'm doing, either editing or writing, or, you know, it's gotten crazy enough where I actually went out with a whiteboard and have all of my tasks and what I'm working on at the moment. But I'm writing from the moment I'm able to have a, you know, coherent thought until I go to bed, which is like, you know, 11 or 12 at night, so...
And then there's other times that you, you make little forays because, I mean, we're lucky this week is we have some insight because we have a spy with on your side of things because we have Susan who can give us all the lowdown on the weekly weekly gatherings out there with your writers
yes.
group.
Yes, our writers group consisting of Susan and myself and Alexandra, of course. And sometimes Tally does make an appearance to add to the Tally Rally, of course.
Yeah.
But
and
we
I harass them wise, computer-wise. Yeah. I provide the harassment and tempt them away from writing via Facebook.
Yeah. Yes, and of course, you know, we see the reflection of whatever Rachel is watching on her computer in her glasses, which is either Sherlock or Star Trek.
Or
but we won't
both
tell her
at the
that.
Same time.
Yes.
And it does, and it usually involves us sitting across the table from each other with our headphones in, talking through either Google Talk or Facebook because we don't want to hear all the annoying little teenage girls that are in the rest of the place.
Yes, the teenage prayer groups are like, you know, always devolve into talking about which boy they want, so studying the Bible, which is fine, but it just gets really annoying, especially when they bring in speakers and start listening to the radio when they're not supposed to, and there's like 10 of them all giggling. That just drives me nuts. So, yeah, I start listening to death metal at that point.
Yeah, that's the point when the headphones accidentally come out of the computer and you blast Slayer across Starbucks.
Yes.
Or Cradle of Filth.
That sounds fun. We need to get that on video sometime, you know, when that happens. I'd love to see the reactions.
Yeah. Or we should actually start talking about, you know, the you know, romance scenes and who is sleeping with who and what character is, you know, doing what to the other. And yeah. The strange looks we get. I don't know why.
Oh yes, you get very interesting looks when you're sitting in a coffee shop talking about literary fornication. It's fabulous.
Yep.
No, it's just the spellbound workers at the coffee shop that are just amazed that they get to be in the presence of such literary giants every week. That's what's really happening.
We have the baristas on our side though. They're like, you know, if it ever happens again, we'll tell them to leave.
Yes, we run many an obnoxious teenager out of Starbucks on Thursday nights.
That is awesome.
Yeah, the greatest thing was this past weekend, there's a coffee shop close to my house that has really great chai because I don't drink coffee. So I went in and for one of the Grim Reaper novels I'm writing, it has a several tarot card layouts. So, and of course, I used to be a psychic, and I still am, but I don't do readings anymore. I have all of my tarot cards and runes and, you know, all the other tricks of the trade. So I was in the coffee shop, you know, laying out the tarot cards so I could write out the meanings for the layout in the books. And people were just giving me looks like, what in the hell are you doing? That was great.
You should have taken her with you, Mike, when you all did your retreat that you had mysterious stuff popping up on your laptop, I believe, right?
Oh yeah, that would have been great. Yeah, probably
yeah,
the best. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I read the post that you had online telling you what was going on. That was great.
Yeah, I probably the best tarot reading I've ever had happened in that place. It was pretty right on the money.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah, we need to connect the dots and yeah have Crimson go out in the next big retreat out there in Indiana. Maybe
yeah.
She can figure out what's happening out there.
Well, what's funny is that you know you get a bunch of writers together, and so we're all in the same room. Okay, for once we're all in the same room, and yet you look around and everyone's on their laptops and their phones and whatnot. And we're all chatting with each other, you know, online when we're all in the same room together. It's quite humorous.
Oh
yeah,
my God!
That's the way it seems to go.
was the Vampire Carlstrom guilty of this too? Was he there that weekend?
Yeah, he was in my room, kind of freaked out by the fact that, you know, there was a ghost, like, you know, in the bed. And you know, he's like, right here? Like, well, yeah, that's where the dowsing rods were pointing, you know, and everything. And he's like, you know, freaking out. And then I would show him, you know, what was written on the laptop. He's like, dude, no, no. You know, it was quite funny.
Oh, I can see
that's
that.
Awesome.
Yeah. I can see Rodney doing that.
Yeah.
See,
yeah,
there
was
exciting stuff in Indiana, Crimson. You need to go investigate it.
I don't know about that. I stay away from the ghosts. I've had enough living in haunted houses to deal with them. I'm good.
Well,
the
funny thing is that the first time, you know, this was the second time we'd been there. I'd been there, I guess it's been about 4 or 5 years ago when we had our first retreat, we had it there. And we go up to the third floor, and there's all this stuff peeling off the ceilings and the walls and everything. And I'm looking around, and I said, oh, my God, this is just like Session 9. And
yes.
we're walking through the halls, and I said, the only thing this place is missing is one of those old-fashioned wheelchairs. We go around the corner, and there's an old-fashioned wheelchair.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
And then I said, I handed my camera to somebody, and I said, here, take a picture. And this was back before I had a smartphone. You know, I just had a digital camera. And I said, here, take a picture of me in the wheelchair. You got to take a picture of me in the wheelchair. The camera would not work. It would not take a picture. It worked fine up until I sat down in the wheelchair, and it worked fine after, but it would not take a picture of me in the wheelchair.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, you had some interesting posts during that retreat, though. That was a lot of fun to read that.
Yeah, if anybody's ever read my novel, Cinema of Shadows, I got a lot of inspiration from that that old woodcarver's building in Converse, Indiana.
Very cool. And what about you, Crimson? I mean, do you draw off of a lot of your, you know, real experiences for some of your work, or are there any good kind of stories you can tell about that?
Yeah, I have in the past, and I do occasionally. I'm actually a medium, so when I was actively doing readings and seances back in college, I would do the big medium circle, big seance that my place of business would have every year for, you know, and I don't really remember a lot of what happened, but I would walk in, and the atmosphere of the business was like walking underwater. I'd go in, and I would constantly smell, like, roses and perfume of, like, the previous owner who had died. And I would close up at night, and there was an old carpenter who had a shoe shop, or not a carpenter, but he would make shoes. And, you know, back a long time ago, and so I was home, I was closing up, and I decided, you know, to end up using the restroom before I was leaving. I had the door locked, no one else was in the place, it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I start hearing this banging sound on the door, and of course there's no one there, and I'm like, you know, like, I'm leaving, give me a minute, and someone was banging on it again, and of course there's no one there, so I left. I lived in one place that was haunted by this little girl. I was 15. The house itself was 150 years old. I would see her walking upstairs. I would see her in my mother's bedroom. I hear my name called. I lived in another place where there would be parties in the attic. You'd hear people moving around and things being moved, and it was just the attic and on the third floor. I have screams at, you know, at night, and there'd be no one in the building, and I could probably go on for a lot longer. I've had my share of those stories. Yeah. So, and experiences. What? I've had them follow me to the dorm. That was fun. So I had to get rid of them.
Well, that's cool, though. I mean, because, I mean, like, a lot of readers, I mean, probably find that interesting, you know, knowing a little bit about that kind of background, because that's what you're bringing to the table in your, you know, some of your work. And I'm sure it, you know, works its way in there somehow.
Oh, it normally does. A lot of my my main characters are psychics or witches or vampires or, you know, some type of, well, again, supernatural creature. But I have several characters that are psychic, so I can definitely put more of myself into them than anything else.
And then you have some characters that are radically different from psychics and witches, big creatures that are under the category of cryptozoology, which I think, and that's your segue for.
Yes, I have a book called Harry and Hung, which, as you can imagine, it is about a 7-foot Bigfoot that is a shapeshifter, and he falls in love with a green shapeshifting alien that crashes to Earth. And, that one is, if you're into monster porn and you actually want consenting monster porn, then, you know, it works. And I'm actually working on a sequel called Coming Yeti about a shape-shifting space alien Yeti who falls in love with his cat shape-shifting alien space girl that crashes down onto his frozen planet. And, of course, the Bigfoot and his shape-shifting mate are on the spaceship too, so they all get together in the end and have fun.
And this is why I love you.
Oh, man.
I'm also writing a book right now about shape-shifting alien Yetis.
Writing monster porn now, Mike? Oh, my God.
Well, anyone who's read my legacy books knows that there's
a little
bit of...
I just had to say that, though.
There's an illustration for that sequence, too. I remember that.
Yeah, there's an illustration for the one, and I'm interested to see what Matt Perry does with this one, because the pre-readers all came back with comments like, I never thought spider sex, I would think about that, but that was hot.
Oh, my God.
I think, Crimson, I think you should give Matt Perry a chance to do a graphic novel version of the Bigfoot stuff.
Yeah.
I think Matt would be...
Please.
That would be
awesome. I'm just glad to call you guys my friends. You guys are beautiful.
I don't know. Hopefully you won't break anybody's brain if we did that.
Yeah, I think Matt would enjoy. Yeah, we'll let Matt know that that's his next assignment.
I can't wait till they start having holographic illustrations in books.
Oh, God.
Yes, the holographic image of the four-way Yeti, Bigfoot, and the two space alien chicks getting it on would be very interesting.
Oh, dear.
Because there is a... very hairy male-male scene between Yeti and the Bigfoot being planned for Coming Yeti, so.
Oh, man.
So what's the feedback been like from the first book so far?
I'm sorry, what?
Feedback on the first book in that series. How's it been so far?
It hasn't sold tons and tons, but some people like it. Some people are like, what are you writing? So.
It's been slow to come.
Yeah.
Depends on the scene.
Oh, I wasn't going there.
So when's the second one going to be out then in that series?
I'm not real sure. I have to finish writing it first. So probably later this year.
Later this year. Oh, wow. Yeah, you get to experience squatches like you've never experienced them before.
Steven's over there like, where do we go from here?
Yeah. Well, I had to give her a chance. I had to give her a chance to talk about this. But we did put up that book cover, actually, on the slideshow for this show. We did put up the book cover for this one. So figured we better mention it. So
yes,
well,
everyone has been warned.
The title just says it all. I mean, you know, he's hairy and he's falling. So
yeah. Well, that's what you always look for, a title, something that, you know, really gets at the center of the book. That's good.
You know who I feel bad for? I feel bad for the Bigfoots that are out there that are just average size. Because all these books are making, you know, stereotyping them all, and how can they live up to it?
You know, that's a good question. When I meet, you know, my first Bigfoot, I will ask him that and see what he says.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Hold on to that. Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, the whole herring hung thing was actually, you know, concocted at a Halloween party with some other writer friends, and we were just kind of throwing around ideas of, like, you know, wouldn't it be great if, and I was like, yeah, how about, you know, how can we put Bigfoot and an alien together? And so that's how the concept just kind of came together.
This is why nobody could find the Bigfoot in the 10 million Bigfoot challenge. They were all too embarrassed. People would laugh at them.
Yeah, they're all hiding out.
I totally agree with why it's never a good idea to let a bunch of writers get bored together.
This is nothing like what I read in Crimson Heart.
But I mean, they're getting used in pop culture quite a bit because they're in all kinds of different commercials lately. So, I mean, I've just seen them all over the place.
Yeah.
So, even Yeti.
Yeah, especially Yeti seems to like Doritos or something.
Yeah, where the guy turns out the lights and tackles the Yeti. Yeah.
Yeah. See, my only problem with that is that, you know, the Yeti would just, you know, he wouldn't be all white. He'd have, you know, the Dorito cheese on his fingers, so his fur would be stained orange after that.
An orange-stained Yeti. There you go.
My favorite one, if you go, I think you can find it on YouTube, I know, but there's one that was done by, actually, Peter Jackson did it for the New Zealand Search and Rescue. But it's got a Yeti who rescues this guy who's, you know, had an accident in the mountains, and basically he takes him back to his cave and makes a fire and, you know, tends to him and everything. And it has one of the best looking Yetis I think I've ever seen, like, in anything.
I'll have to look at that one next time I'm on YouTube.
Very cool.
That's one thing I've never thought while going on YouTube is, yeah, that's some good Yetis. I mean, I guess I'm just not Yeti inclined.
Well maybe Crimson.
There's a 1979, I think it is, movie that was on, I think it was on NBC, called Snow Beast. And If you want some 1970s, like, this is around the same time that everybody was trying to do the next Jaws ripoff, and so you had Jaws and Grizzly and all this stuff. But there was a movie made for TV called Snow Beast that is if you can, it's public domain now. You can find it a lot of places, but it's worth a watch for sure.
Well, Peter Jackson does good Yetis, Crimson. Maybe you'll have to have your people get a hold of his people and discuss film franchise adapting from your books there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, the next thing will be, you know, Yeti Does Dallas or something.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
just, book
three.
Just put Just put Dirk Diggler in a fur coat and it'll work.
Oh man. Too good, too good. So seriously, what is the publishing schedule coming up as far as like what's kind of on the near horizon with all your stuff going on right now?
Lube It Up is coming out in April with Secret Cravings, and I have a trilogy that's like gods and like humorous coming out with Purple Sword sometime this year. The first book is in edits right now, and the other two will follow, and then I have something coming out with Seventh Star sometime this summer, apparently, but I don't know
you
exactly
do.
When.
Yeah, your team is underway on that one.
Yeah. Other than that, I plan to have something out for Christmas. I just have to write it. Between now and then, other than that, I really don't know. Exactly.
Very cool. I just don't know how to follow something exciting as the Yeti stories. That is
how you know.
I'm just lost.
Yeah, somebody under your name is calling out in the chat room.
Just when we thought we were out, Stephen tries to pull us back in.
Oh dear. I wonder what Susan's thinking right now. She's probably shaking her head.
I have no words. Just none.
Oh my God. Too much fun. But
and that's the point of writing, you know, Space Yeti is just all about having fun, because honestly, like, sometimes you just can't be too serious about writing. I mean, I love it, and some of the stuff that I write, I have a weird sense of humor, so it usually ends up a lot in my books, and if you take them seriously, yeah, you really can't when it comes to Yetis and Bigfoot and, you know, gods that show up naked and, you know, some chick's bed and, yeah.
Well, on a serious note on that topic, I, you know, was reading an interesting article not too long ago that Amazon was really cracking down on the quote-unquote monster porn. Have you experienced any of that?
I actually have not, because I do try to stay away from the, you know, titles such as, you know, Come for Bigfoot. I mean, mine isn't. A lot of the stuff that is monster porn, quote-unquote, is non-consensual, and, like, gyno porn is, like, you know, the raptor, you know, basically raping the chick, and she loves it. Ooh, and oh, my God, it's great. No, mine is all consensual. It's all happily ever after, you know. They all
it's
end
partly
up,
done.
All
it's not, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mine, they're not just big hairy beasts. Like, I make them actual shapeshifters, so they become human, or at least human alien, and then turn back into the big hairy beast. So, you know.
Right.
But you did one thing that I was just wanting to ask you while you're talking about that, because you said, like, this one is kind of just for fun. And then, of course, you have a lot of different types of books out there. What books would you say that you personally feel are your best writing as a writer? What do you think, you know, as far as, like, what are the ones that you may be the most, quote-unquote, serious with, you know, as far as the books go?
Well, if we're talking about, like, writing technique, I couldn't tell you. I can tell you my favorite. I do have specific books that I love. It's mostly I have, like, characters in them that just kind of stick with me. That would be my Soul Reaper series, which is Masquerade, Angelic Craving, Soul Reaper, and Falling. And I love the characters in the books and, you know, would continue writing them. I have another one, you know, Turning Ash, which is a vampire novel, which, you know, I love the characters and I'm actually writing a sequel to it. I like vampires, so it's probably all my vampire stuff more than it is like the shape-shifting stuff or werewolves or space yeti. I just have a thing for them, so those are usually the ones that I try to focus more on. And I have a one character that has hopped around at least, you know, 40 books, and he's like my angel of death. He just crosses all genres, and yeah, he just shows up because he's death and he's an angel, so he can do what he wants.
So he'll be the one that your fans dress up as at Dragon Con most often then, correct?
Yes, that would be great. I'm actually waiting to hear if Dragon Con will accept me.
Well, they should. You're a tour de force of writing, I tell you. But I mean, I don't know how you do it. It's like
I don't know how I do it either. So my husband puts up with it, so that's all I care about.
Yeah, because it's you've made a lot of different publishers very very happy and gotten a lot of good stuff out there. And certainly, we're looking forward to the one you're doing with us too.
Me too.
She'll have it on your desk in about an hour.
Actually,
I don't
want to
know
the first story.
It's with the editor, as a matter of fact, so it's underway. That one's underway.
Mary sent him the first two. The third one is done, and I'm editing the first one in the new series to send over. So
you are making the
oh my god.
You are making the rest of us look bad.
Yeah, dude. We got to talk.
I tell her that all the time. She doesn't listen.
No,
and by next
sorry.
Week, she'll have books 1, 2, and 3 of the spinoff series done.
Oh, God, no. I'm not that fast. I have to write, you know, horror than romance. It seems.
I can see the emails already. Why can't you be more like Crimson?
Oh, no. Don't pin it on me. I told Steven that he had to know what he was getting into when I sent him stuff.
Yeah,
he's
very clear.
Seven Stone will have to create
Susan,
an
you just
new...
have to go hide in her laptop and stuff. Susan, you just have to be our spy now and just, like, hide all the writing implements around her.
I was going to say,
well,
I don't know where she lives. I'll just go distract her.
Seven Stone will have
Susan's
to create
dangerous
an entire...
enough. I mean, I'm occupied enough just keeping her up with Susan. I mean, good God. I mean.
Well, Seven Star will have to create an entire new imprint just for her.
Yeah.
Well.
Interesting you said that.
Oh,
Susan
God.
Knows what I'm laughing about right now. Susan knows what I'm laughing
yes.
about.
Yes, yes.
Anywho, we're coming down 2 minutes. Crimson, would you like to give out your links before we just all lose our minds?
Sure. My website
too late.
Is Raven. Yeah, my website is ravenheart.com, RAVYNHART, and of course you can find me on Facebook at under Crimson Heart. Twitter is at Crimson Heart. My blog is crimsonheart.blogspot.com. And Kindle Nook, just type in Crimson. Heart with two Y's, not with an I, and you'll be able to find my multitudes, apparently. So yeah. And speaking of multitudes, Susan and I are actually have finished a book together, and she's editing it as we speak. So that's something to look out for.
Yeah, I know. I've got to hurry up.
I'm just
very
saying.
Cool. Very cool. Oh dear, and. I should mention, too, also that our guest next week, Lee Martindale, is amazing. And, yeah, she'll be she'll be coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern next week on the Star Chamber show. And I know everybody here is pretty stoked about that. And she's going to be toast mistress at Mid-South Con, so we'll get a little Mid-South Con love in there next week, too. So, but... Yeah, but thank you. Yeah, definitely for joining us tonight, Crimson. Is a perfect way to cap off Women in Horror Month, I think.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I look forward to bugging you all again sometime soon.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. Just think, you know, Space Yetis and Bigfoot.
Space Yetis
Woo!
And Bigfoot. Yeah, we have not covered that often on the show, but so that's a
yeah.
good, that's a
and
good
with
one.
That, well, good night, folks. Oh, my God.
Good night.
Night all.
Take care, everybody.
Night, everybody.
All right. Bye.